Welcome to the Security Sessions podcast, brought to you by Thales and hosted by me, Nera Jones. In this podcast series, we'll be discussing the technologies, people, and processes behind information security and delving into topics like data security, remote access, and digital transformation. We'll be speaking to Thales and industry experts to bring you fresh perspectives on how to navigate the world of cloud security. Welcome to episode one of the Thales Security Sessions. Today, the title is Real Threats for Real People. What has the pandemic taught us? I am delighted to be joined by Todd Moore, Head of Encryption Products for Thales, and Rick Robinson, Principal and Trusted Advisor at Goldberg Technology Consulting. I will ask Todd and Rick to briefly introduce themselves. Todd.
Thanks, Nera. My name is Todd Moore. I'm responsible for encryption products here at Thales. I've been in the security business for over 30 years. The first 20 was working with federal government, and the last 10 within commercial industry. So different customers, but same problems. Rick, over to you.
Thanks, Todd. Good afternoon, Nera. I'm Rick Robinson. I'm the principal for Goldberg Technology Consulting, my own little consulting company. Throughout my career, a couple of degrees in engineering, a real passion for applied mathematics. I've worked for five startups. Two of them were fortunately successful, working in everything from defense to payment systems, and then later on working on encrypted voice over IP. And then most recently at IBM, I was the offering manager for encryption and key management, where I had the opportunity of not only seeing the development of research in the area of encryption and key management, but also watching how the market has evolved for that important technology.
Thank you both. Excellent. I'm delighted to have you with us today. So it is undeniable that we live in very strange times. We are becoming more remote, more digital, and that in itself introduces more risks. So what do we do about that? Are businesses perhaps being forced into digital transformation too quickly and therefore cutting corners? How can we ensure that businesses adapt to the changing threat vectors as more valuable data gets pushed further out into the infrastructure due to remote working and similar changing behaviors? So to start the discussion, what would you say are the top three threats to organization, especially as we look towards 2021? How have they changed during the pandemic, Rick?
Well, Nera, you know, 2020 has been a year unto itself, and change is an understatement of sort of the practices and procedures and threats that we've seen. And when it comes to protecting data, I think it's really kind of amplified, some of the threats we've seen in previous years. Specifically, we're now wrestling with to a greater extent, a lack of consistency in how we protect data, protect our infrastructure. And that leads us to a great opportunity, or not really opportunity, but a concern over more malware attacks, more ransomware attacks. And of course, the best mechanism in this 2020 environment that the bad guys would be using would be through phishing attacks, all as a means to an end to infect enterprises, and not just steal information, but really kind of monetize the crime through ransomware. Turning out to be a very convenient and easy way for bad guys to monetize their efforts. They don't have to deal with reselling data as much as just getting payment for releasing the data that they're hijacking in enterprise environments. Todd, what do you think?
Rick, no, I agree. You know, the uptick of ransomware and malicious code has just been, you know, incredible, especially here in the United States. We've seen quite a wave uptake of attacks in that area. I guess one of the areas that I see, you know, from a threat to organizations is just the data sprawl, right? I mean, as this COVID times has moved more and more of us at home, we're getting very good at finding ways to do our jobs. And, you know, I think as employees, we're getting even better at doing shadow IT than we ever were before. And I don't think that mean it in a bad way. I think that people are trying to be very focused on being able to do a job. And so if that means I have to use my wife's laptop or PC to be sure that my video call goes through because my other work laptop failed, or I try the organization's approved data transfer method and that no longer works, I'm going to find something that maybe is commercially available to move things around. So I think that people are becoming very comfortable with getting their jobs done and using what's ever available to them. And that's increasing a lot of threats for our organizations during the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for that. Definitely, phishing attacks have been an increasing problem over the last decade. And that brings me to the point that now that everybody more or less works from home, do you think insider threat has just become a whole lot bigger? Rick, perhaps?
Certainly. I think the landscape for the insider threat has changed a little bit, or at least what we define it as. I mean, the poster child for the insider threat is Edward Snowden, and everybody thinks, you know, that is the definition of an insider threat. But actually, I think it's broader than that. As Todd indicated, you know, we're learning to kind of get along to our own sort of shadow IT. And that means that we're introducing personal devices, whether they're phones, whether they're tablets or personal laptops, into an environment that ultimately might have access to either the cloud environment or the enterprise environment. And you know, data is flowing more broadly and more rapidly than ever before. So it's not just that an insider threat is a person, but an insider threat is any of the things that are now accessing that network. And whether it's a tablet or whether it's a phone, those two are also subject to the crosshairs of bad guys as a means to get access to that important data. And there's a lot of data to protect. And now there are a lot of means that the bad guys can use to attack those networks, attack those environments. So I think insider threat is actually broader than what it's been before. I don't think we're going to see as many Edward Snowdens out there, but we are going to see a lot more things out there that could be leveraged to attack, attack our data repositories.
And indeed, Rick, that's a very good point, because when generally when we talk about insider threats, we immediately think about malicious or disgruntled employees, but on the main and in general, employees just want to do their job, and they will try and find the means that enable them to do just that. And those very means might not be very, very secure. So it's a much bigger problem now that the pandemic has driven people to work remotely faster than they would otherwise have done. So Todd, what's your take on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, thinking about, again, it's not always disgruntled employees from an insider threat. I mean, that critical data that we're creating at our homes and all these remote locations and mobile devices that Rick mentioned. I mean, and also using a bunch of software as a service cloud applications. Again, what's available to us? I think one of the largest threats that we're seeing from, again, people trying to do their job is just misconfiguration. We know that one of the biggest concerns or one of the issues that we see is, you know, folks want to use tools, but they don't necessarily know how to configure the security elements of those tools properly. If it's from, you know, simply as turning on encryption or key management and using that tool with those fundamental security capabilities, but not truly managing the keys after they've done that and are losing those encryption keys, or, you know, it could be simple things as just a multi-factor authentication. It's amazing how many threats could be reduced by just turning on something as simple as a multi-factor authentication, making sure you know who you are and where people are accessing your particular system. So I think it goes back to something that Rick said. I mean, the insider threats are always going to be there, but it's broader in the sense that you know, we have to continue to deploy the same things that we've always done in the past to counter those insider threats, whether that's from defense in depth, having multiple access controls, using authentication. So I don't think the mechanisms have changed. I think that the landscape and the number of elements that are being brought in, you know, those endpoints, mobile devices, machines, others, we just have to make sure that we're deploying the appropriate foundational security techniques.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've always been a great fan of multi-factor authentication in every respect. So that's a very good tip. So, Rick, do you have some tips for us?
Well, of course, you know, your best practices are pretty well known. Multi-factor authentication, I can tell you that, you know, just within my business and from my friends and my family, you know, there are no accounts anymore that aren't multi-factor authentication, whether it's our Amazon accounts or any of the accounts we use for streaming media. Everything is multi-factor authentication. And I think that unto itself is a huge step that everybody can pursue. And I do see, now that we have it all enabled, I do see attacks against my accounts, because I'll get a prompt for a one-time password on my phone. And I know I didn't just log in. So I know that the bad guys are out there, you know, trying to log into all the accounts that they possibly can get access to. And so that, I think, is at a very minimum something everybody should be doing is multi-factor authentication. And then the second thing, one thing that I think that everybody kind of forgets, are the basics about disaster recovery. Make a backup of your data, make a backup in multiple places, and go ahead and put it on a thumb drive, but put that in a secure location at a bank, or if you have a place, you know, in your house that's secure and offline. Prepare for sort of the worst. It's unlikely it's going to happen, but you know, that bread and butter of security should continue to be pursued now more so than ever before. You know, people don't want to lose access to their online accounts. Use a password manager. Use multi-factor authentication. They don't want to lose, you know, their family photos. Make a backup copy of that. You know, standard practice. And I think somewhere along the lines in the last 10 years or so, we kind of forgot to do that or stopped doing that. But I think those two or three things will really kind of make a big, big difference in protecting our data. And they're not difficult to do, especially with the availability of phones as the second authentication method. It makes it just so easy, and there's really no reason people can't be taking those basic steps today.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. So a combination of technologies that are easy to use, as well as the appropriate processes to manage all of this new environment. So talking about processes, and as we sort of deal with this pandemic, is this a new thing that should now form part of what we traditionally term as a business continuity plan?
Well, this is Rick, and I think it should have been there really all along, because a pandemic is, in one way or another, nothing different than another natural disaster, whether we consider those natural disasters to include earthquakes or fires or storms or hurricanes, power outages or infrastructure outages. Business continuity and business continuity plans shouldn't be so specific that when another natural disaster comes up, that the business continuity plan can't kick in and help keep that business running. You know, when we look back about 8 years ago, there was a hurricane that hit New York, Hurricane Sandy, flooded everything. And many of the financial institutions had not even considered that a hurricane could get up that far or do that kind of damage. So their business continuity plans were in some ways too specific. But what they should have been thinking about is, if the entire infrastructure within the city of New York was unavailable for a period of time, how could they keep their business going through another data center or through a cloud? They should have been thinking about that. And now, in the world of a pandemic, where we're all working remotely, you know, how different is this from, let's say, a hurricane or a massive snowstorm, or if we live in California, let's say an earthquake like Oakland experienced, you know, 20 years ago. This should be part of a business continuity plan. And really, a good business continuity plan, like I said, is one where it's not so specific to an issue that it fails if that issue occurs, such as a pandemic. It should be broad enough to say, regardless of what happens in this location, business will continue, and here's how it'll continue.
Extremely valid point, Rick. What do you think, Todd?
No, I agree, Rick. pandemic is always been there in a lot of different forms in terms of natural disasters. I'm thinking back to within Gemalto Talis, we build business continuity plans, and pandemic was always one of the line items that we included in those plans. And within the room of folks, we kind of chuckle thinking, well, that may never happen. And guess what? Here we are, 2020 happened. So it's kind of amazing that we're actually putting those plans in place. But I agree with you that, the big things, I think a lot of organizations thought about, how do we keep the business going? How do we keep the IT moving? How do we keep our employees, doing their jobs? But it's some of the smaller things that I think surprised me the most as part of those business continuity plans. And, we may think that they're kind of small and not important, but a lot of us were going into offices every day and interacting with folks, and we missed that social interaction of seeing everybody every day. And some of us were familiar with a workstation or an environment where we had all the tools right there when we walked into our desk, and it was no longer available to us. So I think things had to change a little bit from a business perspective, so we could still be successful at our jobs. And I guess what I've learned from business continuity plan is, as we go forward in thinking about moving out of offices into remote working, as an example, what are those little things that we kind of glossed over that last time that we'll want to think about as we make our employees successful and keep our businesses successful going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this makes me think that, in the security industry, we've always talked about good governance, and it seems somehow perhaps it has been forgotten over the years, and the principles that were there decades ago are still the same principles. So do you think organizations perhaps now will actually listen to this wake-up call and be more resilient and or secure as a result of the pandemic-driven changes?
This is Rick. I think so. I think they will be, because not only are they seeing the necessity for this to continue to deal with their organization and ensuring that business proceeds, but they're also getting it from another perspective, and that is that they're probably locked down in their home with their spouse and their kids in an environment that they never planned to be the home base or the office for so many people in one small area. And so now they're concerned not just about their business, but the business continuity of their kids having to go to school remotely, their spouse also having to work remotely, and the infrastructure within their home has to be, and it's a microcosm compared to what an enterprise goes through, but just like the little infrastructure within their home has to be completely bulletproof so that they can do their work and keep everybody else in their family happy. And I could tell you, when the internet is down in our home, I can tell because I've got three people standing at my office, wanting to know like when it's going to come back up. So it becomes, becomes very important at a very local level that we have business continuity or continuity on our endpoint infrastructure. But I think that amplifies the importance of making sure that our businesses also have the support it needs to guarantee continued operations, regardless of the disaster that comes their way.
Thank you, Rick. Todd, what do you think?
No, definitely agree. Will organizations be more resilient and secure? I absolutely agree with what Rick was saying. I mean, I think that organizations will have to make sure that standard common security practices are pushed out to no matter where folks are doing their work, whether that's in an office or at homes, and no matter what device that they're using, whether it's a mobile or a fixed desktop or laptop. So there will be consistent security policies that need to be managed, and there will be basic security practices like backup and disaster recovery that needs to be managed across all that different infrastructure and types of devices. I think the other thing that's going to help us from just a pandemic organization resiliency perspective is just, I mentioned data sprawl and how data is just finding itself in a lot of different places. And organizations, want to get control of that and maintain that. So I think that you're going to see a lot more implementation from organizations of discovery mechanisms, not just one time, but monitoring, making sure that organizations understand where their critical data is or an organization's critical data is, and in deploying appropriate tactics to protect that information. So I think at the end of the day, the pandemic is teaching us a lot of great things about security and implementing those best practices as we work in a lot of different locations.
Yes, absolutely, Todd. And you just mentioned data sprawl. So, and of course, the more data we have, the more distributed it is, the more conducive it is to criminals. So on that point, how do you see the threat landscape change as we settle into this new normal?
So as we look at 2020, to Todd's point, there's been this huge data sprawl, and one specific industry is seeing that firsthand, and that's the healthcare industry. We have millions of people that have now been tested for COVID, been engaged in hospitals or clinics. That has created an enormous amount of data. And what we're seeing now is just new opportunities for monetizing, because it's more data that didn't exist before. I believe in the story of Willie Horton, people asked him why he robbed banks, and he says because that's where the money is. So when we look at all this new data that's out there, especially as a result of COVID, I think we're going to see the bad guys taking that same approach. It's like, well, I've got all this data now. I can lock it up because that's where the money is. And I see, as a means to an end, I see they're going to focus more on phishing attacks to get people to get that environment somehow, to expose the data so they can capture it and lock it up so they can get paid, monetizing their efforts, because there's just all this data that's now out there in the healthcare industry that didn't exist before. We're very distributed. The healthcare environment has been one that is historically been distributed, everything from local doctor offices to local clinics, to local hospitals, to national health organizations. So it's been a very distributed model, but that, I believe, represents an opportunity for the bad guys to find one of a number of ways into that environment where, again, the approach, the easiest way to monetize it is to lock it up with ransomware and get paid. So I do see that as a growing threat as a result of 2020 and moving into 2021 and 2022. At the same time, I think organizations are so dependent on this new data to really begin to diagnose the better vaccines, how this will impact people in the long term. Doctors and researchers need access to that data so they can do their work. So as we move ahead, we've got two sort of conflicting factors. We've got the bad guys that want to lock up the data because it's an easy way to make money. But at the same time, we've got medical professionals who need access to that data so they can do the good research work that is going to keep us healthy for the next 20, 50, 100 years.
Absolutely, Rick. And with all the other implications this has on data privacy in general. So, Todd, what do you see some of the threats being that you see becoming more of a reality next year?
Well, I when I think about the threats and how a CISO is going to react to those threats, I think the top three priorities that a CISO has to think about in 2021 is in three categories: discovery, protect, and control. And what I mean by that is the threat that Rick so well explained with the data sprawl and healthcare data being all over the place. But there's also more regulations, privacy regulations that you mentioned, Nira, coming out. And so as a CISO, there's so many things that you have to deal with. And regulations aren't a bad thing. Compliance is not a bad thing in this sense. It really means that you need to understand where the critical data is, and you need to find that so you can protect that from those bad guys. And I think from a protection perspective, not all data is created equal. There are more things critical to an organization or to yourself personally, and you want to protect those in different ways. And there's a lot of different mechanisms for that. So I think an organization has to understand where the critical data is, but also protect it, what's most important to them, through the last element being control, through a policy that makes sense based on what that type of data is centralize your keys so you can manage the data encryption if that's something you're using, or tokenization across that. But one thing we mentioned earlier in the podcast was just configurations. I think that one of the threats that CISOs need to take a look at is, as we use more and more commercial applications and we use more commercial public cloud vendors, we want to make sure that we're deploying consistent frameworks, consistent templates, to make sure that we're putting the right security as we use those commercial applications. So the threat landscape, I don't think is changing so much throughout the pandemic. I think the bad guys, as Rick said, are looking for ways to monetize it where they can. So from a security perspective, we just have to make sure we're filling those holes and making sure that we're having a holistic approach to make sure there are no major holes left within our specific organization.
Indeed. So, finally, I'm going to ask you both for one piece of advice for our listeners, starting with you, Rick.
So one of the things that 2020 has really taught me is something that I was told as a very young man, and that is to don't believe everything that you read. One of the things that we as security professionals have to battle this year and moving forward is dealing with misinformation. And so if there's one piece of advice I would recommend to anybody who is listening to our podcast today, is just make sure that the information that you're acting on is coming from a trusted source, and make sure that you're not working with claims that seem too good to be true, with threats that haven't been verified. You know, just take a very cautious perspective on the information that you're getting. It is so easy right now for misinformation to spread, and it can ultimately cost enterprises, that misstep where all of a sudden they thought they were doing the right thing, but now they've given access to their enterprise, to their information, to their keys, to the wrong person, social engineering and the like. So just there's one piece of advice, double check the information that you get to make sure that you're making the right decision at the right time.
Thank you, Rick. And Todd, what's your one piece of advice?
Oh, there's so many. My one piece of advice would be that security has never been easy. And nowadays, it's even more complicated with all the things that we've talked about, the data sprawl and operational complexity. I guess one piece of advice for everyone listening to the podcast is, do something versus nothing. I see way too many organizations and colleagues choose to do nothing, the ostrich effect, put your head in the sand, and assume that it's all going to go away when it comes to security. I think it's important that you take a look at what is important to you, start implementing things in phases, baby steps, but do something versus nothing. I think it is important to start small, build big, and that could be as simple as we talked about before, protecting storage or backing up information, but put some of those best practices in places. Multi-factor authentication is another example. But the one takeaway for folks is, please don't ignore security. It is important. It's important for all of you as a personal and your families as you go through this pandemic from a data privacy perspective, but also for your organizations and companies as we continue to get through and grow our businesses as we go forward. So,
and Todd, I totally agree with your comments. You can't lock up and not do anything. You've got to take action.
Absolutely. Thank you both for your insights and a very enjoyable conversation. That's all we have time for. Until next time.
Thanks, Neera. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Neera. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Love this episode of the Talos Security Sessions podcast? Search us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast service to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Be sure to visit us at cpl.talosgroup.com to access previous episodes, bringing you insights from industry experts on the latest cloud and data security news and trends. Thank you for listening.